Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Pixels. This is a show where we talk about the gaming news from the past couple of weeks or so, and we try to give you an overview of all of the important things that have been announced and that have happened in the gaming industry. My name is Patrick Beja, and tonight, today, this morning, depending on where you are, we're so international, I'm joined by Ed, who is in the US. How are you doing, Ed?
I am doing well. It's nice early in the morning here, and I'm ready to get going.
Yeah, it's already in the afternoon here in Paris, where I'm right now. And to spice things up a little bit, today we have a returning guest from a few months ago, Daniel, whose last name I can now finally say, Daniel Ahmad. How are you doing, Daniel?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing okay, but you're the one who's had the great, you know, the big news in the past few months since you've been on the show. You were on when I was living in Japan, and you were basically doing analysis of gaming on the side, and now it's your full-time job. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's right. So I recently joined Nico Partners, who are a based market research and consulting firm based in the US and China. And so, yeah, it's great because I'm working for them now, and that's my full-time job, and it's what I can talk about on Twitter as well, because the last time we spoke, I wasn't really able to talk about that in depth and kind of what I was doing or what I was going to be doing. But now that's all done, it's we can talk about it.
Excellent. And so I hope you'll have amazing insights on this holiday season that's already well underway. I think there are some trends we can note, but we'll see what you have to say. If nothing else, we'll just talk about games, and that will be fun.
That'll be better.
Yeah. We have some NPD numbers that were sort of half leaked for the month of October, which we'll use as a launching point for the discussion on the trends for the holidays and see how different games and different companies have been doing. But before that, let's go over a couple of bits of news for Nintendo, whose Switch keeps making headlines, which, you know, that's to be expected, of course. It's a big event that's going to happen in March next year. By the way, before that, Super Mario Run's price has been confirmed for $9.99, which you guys think it's too much? I thought that's the price I predicted a few months ago when they announced it. I think it's appropriate because they can lower it if it sells, you know, it doesn't sell enough, but they'll sell huge amounts to the people who want to pay that amount. And there are a few.
Yeah, I think they're going to. And so this is very true on consoles and stuff, but maybe not so much on mobile. But like, you sell most of your units in the first like 2 or 3 weeks, right? So having a high price and then lowering it is not something that it's the greatest of business models, but I think that the $9.99 might be a little much for a mobile game. I mean, the only things that are like $9.99 on game wise, at least, are like the Final Fantasy games and stuff like that, and those sell like poop on there. So I don't know. I think it's a little pricey, but maybe I'm wrong.
I think it's, you know, it doesn't go over that $10 price range, yeah, which right. is what they needed, I think. But Daniel, what do you think? It is definitely more pricey than usual, you know, game mobile phone games. But this is Nintendo, and Mario is not a traditional smartphone game. So,
yeah, I mean, as you both have said, it's you know, the majority of games on mobile are free, and that's just the way it has been for quite a while now. You know, paid games were popular in the past, but now if your game is free, you're going to get millions of downloads and monetized through in-app purchases. Now, the good thing about Super Mario Run, of course, is that there is a free trial, a demo. You know, it's free to start, so you can actually download it, play a bit of the game, and then if you do like it, you know, go from there and buy it. And I think what Nintendo are trying to do, first of all, this is a bit of an experiment for them. So they're still experimenting with the right sort of, you know, pricing model and distribution model. And so I think what they're trying to hope for here is that, you know, they're going to get lots of downloads. We've already seen that 20 million people have clicked the notify button on the App Store, which is a huge number. And so, you know, once those people download it, they're kind of hoping that they'll be able to perhaps change the mobile landscape and create a market for paid games in the same way that Minecraft sort of did, you know, on mobile, in the same way that Angry Birds used to. And really, it's going to take this risk from Nintendo for that to happen, because they're the only company that has an IP big enough to actually succeed as a paid game. And if that does succeed as a paid game, you know, through the $9.99 price, through discounted prices, then it really opens up the opportunity for them to do that in the future. But also for other companies as well, who might have, you know, IPs which are big or even not as big, so much, much smaller niche indie IPs, to put their games on as a premium as well and have them do well. So I see this as an experiment. It could work. And if it does work, then that's a change in the norm from your traditional free game with in-app purchases. And it could lead to some quite interesting new models that we see on the App Store.
Yeah, that's absolutely what I'm hoping for as well, that it opens the door for actual core gamer developers mm-hmm. to start creating actual games that we core gamers will enjoy. Yeah. And even more importantly, I think some people are thinking, well, $9.99 is a little bit expensive. I think others might go a little bit lower. But if Nintendo, with a game like Mario, can't sell their game for $9.99 when it first comes out, then no one can, right? If yeah, they don't exactly. succeed, it means that market does not exist on smartphones. So I'm glad they're trying it out, and I'll be paying the price. So we'll see. other rumors are, well, other news from Nintendo are, well, okay, this was a piece of news. Others are rumors. The price seems like it's being confirmed by multiple sources for the Switch. Should be £199, like we discussed on the latest episode. So we're not going to go over that again. But the release date seems to be March 17, which, very importantly, it's St. Patrick's Day. And, I mean, I really think Nintendo is trying to tell me something here. And my answer is, I was already going to buy it anyway. You didn't have to do that, but thank you. So yeah, March 17 makes sense. It's supposed to come out in March. We're going to have a Breath of the Wild exclusive, apparently, at the Game Awards on December 1st. There will be the Mario game is going to be a little bit more freeform, like Mario Galaxy or Mario 64, unlike 3D World, which I loved, but I'm interested to see what they do with a return to a more open world, well, not open world, but more freeform type game. There's going to be a press demo along with other games that are going to be press demoed in January on the 13th, apparently, the day after the announcements that they're going to do on January 12th, where we'll have the actual date and the price. Skyrim is, again, all of this is rumors, mostly from Let's Play Video Game, which has been breaking a lot of things on that front. Laura Dale working there. Skyrim is definitely coming out, according to her. Splatoon is going to be packed in, and there's going to be a new 1v1 mode. There is going to be a launch Raving Rabbids and Mario crossover RPG, which I'm a little bit okay, I guess the eight-year-olds will enjoy that. There is a Pokemon Sun and Moon version coming out later in, you know, probably the year, basically a definitive version called Pokemon Stars. And finally, the version of the new Zelda game, Breath of the Wild, which I just mentioned, is not going to be available at launch, meaning it will be delayed for both the Wii U and the Switch beyond the launch window, which they had never absolutely confirmed, I don't think, but apparently it's not going to make it. They should finish the game and make sure it's cool, but it's a little bit disappointing, but if it comes out in the next few months, it could work. So that's a lot of news to take in. Any thoughts on all of this? I'm sure we're all going to buy Nintendo Switches anyway. But what do you guys think of that lineup? Potential lineup?
Yeah, I'm curious if the Mario game is going to come out like at the beginning, and that's why they push Zelda back to give the Mario game a little bit more space. I'm also intrigued about the fact that the Skyrim remake is the remake version is the one that's on there. At $200, the amount of hardware in this machine can't be like super heavy, right? So, that's interesting to me that the remake, the one that's running on PS4 and Xbox One right now, is the one that's on that console. They must be doing something really crazy. To get that thing running on there. That's crazy.
It's $199 in pounds, so it's probably going to be $249 in dollars or euros with another.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. But, I mean, the Skyrim, it's probably going to be the remake. We don't know that it's going to have the quality that it does on the existing
machines. It'll probably be downscaled 720p kind of level.
And also, they couldn't release Skyrim, from 2011. that would be kind of dumb. But Daniel, any thoughts?
I mean, I'm interested in seeing what they do on the, I guess, the third party front, but also the maybe second party. So, for example, the Ubisoft game Rabbit, and Mario kind of crossover, which they teased today, I think, in a video as well. I don't know if you've seen that. It was a Ubisoft 30th anniversary thing. Okay. And it's on YouTube somewhere, probably on the channel, but they had it hidden in the background, which was quite cool. Mario is just like a rabbit. But it'd be quite cool to really see what they do have coming from, partners, third party that is, but also if they're working with any others like Ubisoft. So, for example, they worked with Koei before for Hyrule Warriors and stuff like that. So if there are any other of those kind of crossover games which will get people to, whether it's from mobile to console or from PlayStation 4 to Nintendo, but those sort of games that are really going to pull at the, maybe the core gamer or an even more casual gamer in the case of Rabbids, so stuff like Skyrim for core, for example, if they get more of those games on there, which they seem to have a good number of partners, then that's what will really interest me to get it on top of the first-party games, which are already looking great.
Yeah. So they announced, Ubisoft announced at their press conference this year that the new Just Dance game will be coming to the NX.
Woohoo!
So
not my type of game, but yeah, it's good.
Yeah, so
it sells well.
So I wonder if this means there's going to be a bigger relationship there. Plus, I think that kind of hints at the fact that maybe the little Switch handles will have some sort of motion thing in them, right?
Like, yeah, it's possible.
How else are they going to play the Just Dance game? they don't have like a camera or anything. And I think also with the new Dragon Quest games, or not the new ones, the old ones coming to the 3DS, I think that kind of indicates a better relationship with Square. So I think we might see some, maybe not the full Final Fantasy 15 level games from Square, but maybe some lighter remakes or more 3DS like kind of level RPGs and stuff coming to the Switch, like Bravely Second or Bravely Default.
Maybe, yeah, although those weren't, Bravely Default was a big success. The second one kind of didn't follow up, but I could absolutely see Dragon Quest Builders coming mm-hmm. to the Switch, because yep. in Japan yep. especially, Minecraft is such a success. It's basically keeping the PlayStation Vita afloat. So that could happen. And Dragon Quest Builders is, from what I've seen, I've played a little bit, is really fun and well done. So
I just think that all the new Square Enix stuff that's been showing up in Nintendo games like Cloud and Smash Brothers and stuff like that indicates a better relationship between those two companies.
That's true. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right, Ed, when you're saying Mario. I mean, I don't think Zelda has been pushed to give breathing room to Mario. I think it's a technical, they want to make sure it's really polished. But it does give, you know, when you buy the Switch at launch, if there isn't a Zelda game and there is a Mario game, you're going to buy the Mario game. Right, no matter what happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then you are also going to buy the Zelda game when it comes out 3 or 4 months later. So it might seem like, whereas, you know, if Zelda comes out with the machine, maybe less people are going to buy Mario. So it might make sense as a strategy. And if they have another big game or another couple of big games by the end of the year, like Mario Kart and Smash Bros., that makes for an incredible lineup for the first year, and I think it could, between that and the low enough price, it could be a success.
So. Yeah, some sources are saying that the new Mario Kart might just be a remake of Mario Kart 8 on the Switch.
Yeah, which is, you know, given the amount of people who have played that one on the Wii U, it's just as good as a new game. So
right, yeah, but I really do think that they're trying to not give Mario more breathing room, but more like space out their releases more, so they have a constant like flow of titles, like what the original rumor was before the Switch announcement, where there's going to be a constant flow of titles so that people have a reason to keep going back to their Nintendo console, which right now the Wii U does not give me that reason. I literally have not turned it on since I stopped playing Xenoblade Chronicles X.
Yeah,
that's one of the things they need to work on without a doubt, because it's one of the reasons that I ended up, same as you, not playing my Wii U anymore. In fact, I sold it recently, which, to be honest, I'd already played everything on there, but it certainly needs a steady stream of games. Based on what we've seen so far and based on what we've heard, looks like that is going to happen. But, that's until January with the event.
Exactly. We will know all on January 12 and 13.
I think the fact that the third version of the Pokemon game is coming out, so every generation has like a third version, right? Almost everyone, yeah. So I think the fact that the third version is coming out on the Switch might be a little bit of a death knell to the 3DS as well.
I think, you know, people, including Nintendo, who are saying the 3DS is going to keep going, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's still, obviously, it's not going to die the day the Switch comes out. But if the Switch is a success, there's no way the 3DS keeps going for more than a year or two. You know,
it would be incredible if the cartridge slot on the NX could run 3DS games.
No, it won't.
But I find that very unlikely, and you know, so my 3DS is going to stick around for a little bit longer.
I've played a lot of demos of the 3DS on the 3DS this weekend. And honestly, the screen was really hard to look at. At this point, it's become very difficult.
I don't play my 3D on. I always have it off.
No, even without the resolution is so bad. It's
tough. Really? Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
And the best game I played with Picross was Picross 3D. I played never mind. I'm not a big fan of some of the games. talking about Pokemon, Sun and Moon has been selling kind of really well. Apparently, the distribution for the previous Pokemons after our friend Oscar Lemaire, who you know well, Danielle, has tweeted a graph indicating that X and Y sold 4 million units after 2 days. The other one, Ruby and Sapphire,
the remakes of Ruby and Sapphire.
Sold 8 million units in 14 days. And apparently at launch, Sun and Moon sold 10 million units. That's an estimation, I'm sure. But yeah, I guess Pokemon Go. And we're seeing some pretty sweet deals on the 2DS plus Pokemon Sun or Moon for 99 euros here. So yeah, that's
it has to be Pokemon Go, right?
I guess. Yeah, nostalgia that was brought back.
just the fact that like they did a lot in X and Y to kind of do nostalgic hits too. Like you could get the one of the original three starters at like the very beginning of the game, and some of that, like the fact that Sun and Moon just sold way more gangbusters than that. Mm. It has to be.
Yeah, I mean, when Pokemon Go came out, there was straight away, you know, everyone noticed here and you know, and other companies as well, that spending on Pokemon merchandise was up, whether that was the 3DS games itself, whether it was, you know, toys or kind of plushies and stuff like that, and that's really carried over into Sun and Moon. And so now, yeah, as you said, Patrick, this is the best opening for any Pokemon game ever, of all time. And it's about to, Pokemon is about to have the best holiday season ever, of all time. And that's something that you don't really see, less than 20 years after the original game was released.
Right.
And it just shows how big this franchise still is, and how even this year it was able to grow beyond what's come before, when we all knew it was massive back in the days as well.
I think it really, I mean, Pokemon Go just brought it into the mainstream, but it's more than that. Like, even gamers before that, like, oh, they played the occasional Call of Duty or whatever, things like that, they want to jump in on the zeitgeist that is the new Pokemon game.
I want to. You know, I missed it when I was younger. I was too old, basically, when the first ones came out. Mm-hmm. And I want to get into it, but I just, you know, I don't get it. And also, there are so many games. But I, every time there's a new Pokemon that comes out, I try the demo, I give it a go, and... But I just, you know, it's just, I don't understand what's so special about it. And I think what's special is the memories that kids have formed when they were first playing it.
Absolutely.
So. All right, let's talk NPD for a little bit and see if it gives us an indication of the trends worldwide in the gaming industry. NPD, for those who don't know, is an organization that tracks a lot of data, including a gaming report that they put out monthly about sales in the US. And they recently included the digital sales. I don't know that they're included in all of the numbers we have here, but normally I think they do count them. So these are numbers that are normally available to subscribers only, but they were released by someone who's working. I'm not sure, you know, either it's a firm or with NPD, but they are genuine. So here's what we learned.
Basically, what I would say as well, Patrick, is the ones that you're talking about here, that report does not include digital itself. So there's no digital contents here.
Right. Okay. So this is only... So how do they divide this? Like, how? Why do they count digital
sometimes? It's part of a panel. And so you need to be on that panel to be able to access the digital reports. And so EA, for example, who give their digital sales, and Ubisoft and all those companies, they'll get access to it. But any other company that is not providing digital sales to NPD will not have access to it. And so, therefore, it's only a very small number of people that actually get.
Okay, that's a good correction. It definitely changes the way we should perceive the numbers. It's still an indication, but a lot of the sales happen digitally nowadays, especially on PC. Correct. So keep that in mind as we look at the numbers. So there were. Let's go with the good and the bad, and then we're going to have a few surprises. Those who sold well were mainly Battlefront 1. I think that's not a surprise. It's been very well reviewed. It got... These are for October. Oh, yes. What did I say?
Battlefront.
No, Battlefront was last year. and we'll have another one next year. This year is Battlefield. 1.3 million units sold in October. Hardline made 1 million last year. So that's definitely a success. And again, I don't think that's too surprising. It was very well reviewed. Mafia 3 sold 500K against 230K for Mafia 2. So again, a pretty good surprise, even if it doesn't reach the numbers that other AAA titles do.
I think that's indicative of a huge marketing machine that was behind it.
Yep.
Because I did not hear about Mafia 2 other than the fact that you could look at Playboys in it when it came out. So... But Mafia 3, I've heard a lot about, and I've seen commercials for it, and I know, like, I already kind of know the story, or the idea of the story behind it. The fact that they had no holds barred as far as, like, the racist undertones of that era. They took a big leap there, and I'm glad to see it paid off.
Yeah, for sure. You were nodding, Daniel, in the background about the marketing push. Yeah. Skyrim HD also sold pretty well, 400,000 copies. That's a good number as well. The bad, however, there are some disappointments here. Gears of War 4 sold 500,000. Gears of War 3, which was one of, you know, the main trilogy, so it was a little bit bigger, it was 2 million, but even Judgment sold 620,000. And for the number 4 to sell that quote-unquote little, especially with the packs that were included, you know, where the game was included, is a little bit disappointing, I'm sure, for Microsoft. I mean, it's not a ridiculous number, obviously, 500,000 yeah. for 1 month, but it's not the numbers I'm guessing that they were expecting.
I don't think it's indicative of, like, a really of being a bad game, because I've heard it's actually pretty good. I think the thing is that the Xbox One has so little market share, right?
Well, it's catching up, but yeah, I think it's that, and the fact that there is there are so many games coming out. At some point, people have to make a choice, right?
Daniel, what I would say on that one, certainly, is that the first thing to actually note is that Microsoft, or Xbox's, you know, Play Anywhere sort of promotion that they're doing has actually been, you don't see it, but it's actually been quite successful. And so, whilst I can't give any actual numbers out, but what I have seen myself is that the digital attach rate on that game was very high, and certainly higher than the average of what you would see from most games. Now, that doesn't obviously make up for the overall decline that I've seen in that series. And I think what would really be the defining factor or reason for that decline is, as you said, Patrick, you know, there are more games coming out in the shooter category. The Xbox install base, yes, it's a bit smaller than what, you know, the 360 was at that time. And I think that just because there's a lot more shooters out there and a lot more kind of bigger AAA games that are taking away market share from the first party games, that's one of the reasons why it was it was down. But yeah, digital does offset that in some way.
It also fell at a time that, I mean, I guess it was before, but Call of Duty, but Battlefield 1 was coming out like a couple weeks later and stuff like that.
Yeah. And you had Titanfall 2, Call of Duty, you know, all those sort of games.
Right, yeah.
That's what they're.
Tomb Raider sold 175,000 on PS4, 175 on Xbox One last year. That has to sting. I mean, it was a really big number in. I mean, a really big game for the first reboot. You know, the original reboot from a couple of years ago. I think that exclusivity really hurt them. The exclusivity with Microsoft hurt them last year. Yeah.
And I think that the PS4 sales is probably, if you go back to the fact that the PC version came out in January, and so anyone who really wanted to play that game and didn't have an Xbox One would have gotten it on PC. Mm. So I wonder if that's kind of pointing to the reason why the sales were so bad.
Maybe. I mean, did one of you guys put the Steam Spy number
here?
Yeah,
that was me.
Okay, because 1.2 million on Steam is significant. Are you
sure that's
Rise of the Tomb Raider? Isn't that the old one? Okay.
No.
Wow.
No, the old one actually did much better.
Okay.
And it's quite surprising when you actually look at the when you look at Tomb Raider originally when it first came out. It sold about 3 million copies or something, but Square Enix basically deemed it a failure straight away.
Yep. Yeah.
Right. Even though it sold this amount of copies, the budget was very high, and you know, there hasn't been enough sales there. And so that was quite ridiculous for the time because, you know, yes, budgets were getting big, but, you know, if it sold 3 million, you'd expect it to be a success or at least break even. But in the end, it kind of went on. It sold 8 million copies or something like that in the end. Yes, it was at a lower price, but but it ended up being a success. Here with Rise of the Tomb Raider, though. Sorry, go on.
Go ahead, Daniel. Go ahead, finish.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, with Rise of the Tomb Raider here, yes, the exclusivity kind of screwed them over because they had this game which sold okay on Xbox and then sort of okay on PC. And then on PS4, it kind of sold okay-ish, but there wasn't really, at $60 on PS4 a year later, no one's really going to buy it in huge numbers. Mm-hmm. On Xbox One, with that low install base, first of all, no one's really buying it in huge numbers. And then on PC, it was Windows 10 first, then Steam later. But, you know, you can see the drop from 8 million to, 4 million or something? Mm-hmm. And so that's not really what they would have wanted.
So you'd have to
hope that Microsoft paid them enough to...
I don't think they paid enough to make up for that. what do you think it means for the series? Are we going to see a third installment in the rebooted version?
We already have rumors of seeing a third one.
Right.
Yeah, we'll see one. Whether it'll have a lot of changes and kind of they'll try something new and innovate, perhaps, you know, with multiplayer this time or something to that effect, I think we'll see them change it in a way which is... different to what we've seen in this game.
The third one is rumored to be called Shadow of the Tomb Raider, and it's rumored to be developed by Eidos Montreal instead of Crystal Dynamics. So
we've seen that was the thing that someone was watching on a train, and someone snapped a picture and put it on Reddit. Right, I remember that one.
So I was looking at the Steam Spy numbers for the original Tomb Raider. It's at 4.5 million. So that kind of shows you the drop off between the two.
Right.
But I think the fact that they're going to with Eidos instead of Crystal Dynamics might seem like they're going for a cheaper developer. so they don't have to spend as much money and maybe make up some of the lost the money lost from Rise of the Tomb Raider. I don't know.
Maybe.
Some analysts think that they might be going doing the Call of Duty thing where they have two different studios working on Tomb Raider and we get a Tomb Raider every single year. Mm. That's another thing that people are thinking.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's better.
Another
definite disappointment is Titanfall 2, which sold... Yeah. Again, these are only, you know, physical copies, but 180K... The first one sold 865.
Oh.
And the first one was a horrible disappointment. Again, it was an exclusive on the Microsoft side of things. But, oh my Lord, I mean, we knew it was going to hurt to be against Battlefield and Call of Duty and, you know, all of the first-person shooters that were coming out in the same 2 or 3 weeks window. But wow.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I really hope they sold a lot of digital copies to make
they
up
sent
for that.
They sent that game out to die, honestly. Yeah. Like, the time slot that they put them in, there is no reason that game should have come out at the end of the year this year.
But what do you think, Daniel? What were they thinking? That's something, as Ed is saying, we're sort of looking at this and thinking, why? But is there, like, some... deeper inner logic we're not seeing, or are you also puzzled by that decision?
To be honest, I've been asking the same question myself, and
okay.
it's hard to understand exactly why they chose two dates so close to each other. And you know, I can kind of understand maybe a few months ago when Call of Duty was not announced, and they kind of thought, oh, it'll be massive, and we're going to make up with Battlefield 1 doing okay and Titanfall 2 doing, you know, okay, so they both do good numbers together. But then what kind of happened is Call of Duty got a bit of a bad rep. Battlefield 1 became this amazing kind of, you know, savior of the shooter category. And so they didn't change the date or anything. And the only hope now, really, after this release is, I mean, first of all, what I'd say is that they didn't really advertise the game. They didn't really promote it. It's got great reviews, just no one's really buying it. And so now the game is actually quite cheap. Here in the UK, you could pick it up for £20. $30, something like that. It was ridiculously cheap. And so the only savior now for Titanfall 2 is that they are able to ship a lot of copies at a cheaper price and then get some of their return on investment back via DLC, you know, packs, stuff like that, what they can sell in-game.
I wonder if the low number is also the fact that the game came out, like, a couple days before the end of the month. And so these are the October numbers. So I wonder how much that takes into account. If and with So that might make a difference. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, as you said, they sell really the bulk of their numbers towards, you know, in the first few days. But yeah, that, I mean, the thing is, obviously, I don't think it went from 180K to, you know, 2 million
exactly.
After that. But yeah.
Sure.
Skylanders also isn't doing great, minus 41% compared to last year. I mean, yeah, that's not it. It looked strange when Disney went out of that market a while ago. I think now we're sort of seeing it wasn't necessarily a bad decision.
I think Activision is leaning on the fact that that's going to be an IP for them, and less the fact just creating these games. Maybe. Like with they're going to be creating a TV show from it and stuff like that.
A couple of surprises. WWE 2K17, which is not necessarily a game I would consider to be a you know, huge success, sold 280K, but when the 2K16 sold 225. So there you go. There are things that are doing well everywhere. Dragon Ball Xenoverse 2 sold 200K, which is a good number for a game like that in the West. I'm guessing. I mean, I'm not 100% sure.
Dragon Ball's always done quite well in the West, especially recently. Yeah, there's been a few good games.
There's
a
resurgence of old farts like me who like Dragon Ball.
As of a month after the release of the first one, it shipped 1.5 million.
Nice. It's actually done over 4 million at this point.
Yeah,
so the first one it's really done well.
Okay, we'll see what happens for the second one. Paper Mario Color Splash on Wii U sold 100K. I don't know if that's good or bad. On the Wii U, I don't even know anymore.
Well, it's good for Wii U. We'll put it that way.
Yeah. Hardware is also interesting. The Xbox One sold 330K, which is 8% more than they did in the same month in 2015, which is significant because in 2015 they had Halo coming out, and you know, the packs with Halo. So better than that. I think there are a number of people who maybe held off on buying an Xbox One, and now with the S are thinking the time is right. The PS4 is selling less than last year. It still sold 235K in the US. That's 14% less. And the PSVR, we don't have any numbers, but in the accessories category, it made 121. The accessories category made 121 million versus 160 million in 2015. So since, you know, there is less of the Toys to Life games being sold, but probably the PSVR didn't, you know, it's not like the PSVR changed the entire world to the point that the category grew enormously. And that's about it for the significant NPD numbers. We did have some pretty incredible deals on Black Friday for both consoles, actually. I think especially on the PlayStation 4, there were some deals in France. You had the console, the PS4 Slim, with six games for €350. And the games were good. It was like Witcher 3, Doom, Dishonored 2, you know, six games
that's
like
awesome.
That of that quality. It was really hard to resist. I almost bought a second one just for the hell of it. So I'm thinking, and there were great deals on Xbox Ones as well. I'm thinking these, you know, this is the year that these both of these consoles become like everyone's consoles for sure. But I don't know, Daniel, are there any trends, any, you know, things we can note for the overall holiday season already, or is it too early? What do you think?
I think consoles are doing quite well. There's been a boost, certainly from new hardware. So the Xbox One S, when that came out, was, you know, flying off the shelf straight away, lower price, slightly better spec. And it gave people a reason to buy Xbox One. I think a lot of people with the original weren't really into it. And so now there's actually a reason to get one. PlayStation 4 Slim came out. It didn't really do much for PlayStation 4, just due to the fact that there wasn't really any kind of new, unique kind of point about it, apart from it was slimmer and it was a bit cheaper. But PS4 Pro is making up on those sales.
Yeah, and PS4 Pro is actually coming out next week. Start.
Which one?
The PS4 Pro.
Oh, no, it's available. It's been available, for
now?
A couple of years, yeah. A couple of weeks.
Right there.
Yeah, that's how much noise it made. No one's talking about it.
Yeah, it's doing okay. It's basically, to be honest with you, the consoles this year, they're kind of selling the same as they did last year. It's something we've noticed in that there hasn't been this huge boost each year. It's kind of just been doing the same each year. I think that's the failure to kind of attract a younger, more casual audience. And so what the PS4 Pro is doing is really kind of digging into the core and getting the guys who already have a PS4, Xbox or something to get back in and buy a new console. And that's what's kind of expanding into the moment.
So you're saying that the fact that they're doing the same is unusual for the cycle? Usually the sale numbers grow year over year in that stage in the cycle?
It's not so unusual, but it's certainly notable. And usually what you'd see is, for example, with PlayStation 2 or whatever, you know, the price would go down, there'd be a similar model, and it would start sending into the mass market or kind of casual users. But here, I think mobile is sort of, you know, got them all hooked up. And so what they're kind of doing this console cycle is going the opposite route of releasing a more higher-end, more premium device aimed at the core users who have already bought into consoles this generation, and offering them a better alternative which they can upgrade to. And that's what's causing the boost this year, and that's why PlayStation 4 will sell more effectively due to both those options there. And I also think one other thing I mentioned is that Nintendo has quite a big opportunity, assuming it works. It might not be that there's in the market, but what I mean by that is an opportunity for them to target the younger kids market, the casual market, those that haven't upgraded from PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, or Nintendo Wii to PS4 and Xbox One. And so if they get that right, then there could be lots of people upgrading. However, it might be that there isn't that market there yet. And that's one of the reasons why, if we go back to our previous point on Skylanders, that hasn't been doing great. It's down year over year. Other kind of toys to life and family-friendly games, you know, kind of down year over year. And really, the Toys to Life market is looking a bit like what Rock Band and Guitar Hero did last gen, where it started off really strong, but it's become a bit, I don't want to say dead, but it's getting to that point, effectively.
I think Activision must definitely be happy with the money they made on the thing while it was alive. That sense as well, it's probably a repeat of Guitar Hero and the like. But it's definitely looking like finally the hype is dying down, as things do, but except for Pokemon, apparently. That never does.
Sure.
it's interesting that, you know, the more casual market isn't getting in on those new consoles. I'm wondering if that isn't why we're seeing such incredible deals on Black Friday, because we had similar ones in the US. Maybe the manufacturers are thinking, all right, we really need to convince people to spend a little bit of cash here to lock them in. But the fact that they're targeting the existing consumer base with more powerful machines, and obviously Microsoft is going to do the same thing next year with their Scorpio, is makes a lot more sense when you're saying this. They're thinking, well, you know, people, the casual end of the market is being eaten by other things, possibly smartphones or, you know, other types of entertainment. So let's make sure we can milk more money out of the people who really are into our things. I don't know if it's that calculated, but
it's not that calculated, but it is the overall trend. And whilst, yes, of course, you know, PlayStation 4 Slim, Xbox One S, they are going to sell to that price-sensitive market and then kind of casual market. But really, as we've noted, it's not the same as it was perhaps a generation or two generations ago, where the price really was a factor that would, see sales just completely go through the roof. And that's why we've seen more bundles and more kind of value propositions this generation, this time around. And it's again to target the core user and also those that are going to get more out of it.
I did I did get a PlayStation 4 Slim, and that is a really nice machine. I really like it. It's tiny. It's surprisingly small compared to the original one. You know, much smaller than the PS3 Slim, more in line with the maybe not PS1 and PS2, but definitely smaller than PS3 and very silent. I really like the device. All right, and I'm guessing that the Xbox One S is just as good. It looks small as well. So let's leave numbers behind and talk about actual games and what we think of them. There are, you know, as I often say, this show is not a review show and we're not going to be doing reviews, but, you know, impressions on games we've tried a little bit. I've played a few. You guys have played a few. We haven't necessarily completed them. And again, this is not a review, but, you know, impressions, what we think. There are so many games, it's kind of impossible to get away from that. And also, it's impossible to play them all. Let's talk about the ones we've tried at least. I've played a bunch of them. The one I want to mention first is something that is very, it's kind of a guilty pleasure almost. Dragon Ball Xenoverse 2. I hadn't played the first one, but I played Dragon Quest Heroes last year and really liked that. And it sort of scratched my Japan animation / Japan-ness itch in a surprisingly satisfying way. And I thought maybe Dragon Ball Xenoverse 2 would do that for me that year. And it kind of does, you know? It's not the best game in the world. It's definitely got its faults, many of them. Gameplay-wise, it's not bad. It's very Japanese in the sense that every tutorial is essentially a wall of text you have to read, then you have to listen to the person, to the NPC telling you what you just read, and then demonstrating what you should do, and finally you can do it yourself, and then you're back to the wall of text and to the... It is, you know, I love Japan. They have a special way of doing things. But no, actually, the game really is fun. You have to be a fan of Dragon Ball, of course. But if you are, it's kind of a... I don't want to say solo MMORPG. There are multiplayer elements, and it's not an MMORPG, but you create your own character. You go on different quests. There's a main quest line, and then... some what they call parallel quests, which are just basically it's all a big excuse to get into fights with powerful dudes and dudesses. And it does the job. From what I've seen, I've played only a few hours, and it does that job. It scratches that itch. It's competent enough. It's not, you know, there are some very lazy adaptations of anime or these kinds of things that you see coming out just as a pure marketing quick cash-in effort. This is not that. It's not a great game, but if you like Dragon Ball, it's very competent. So I would probably recommend it to people who are into these kind of things. I don't think you guys have played Xenoverse 2, right? So, one note.
The first one a bit, but just like 10 minutes maybe.
Yeah, well, apparently if you've played a little bit of Dragon Ball Xenoverse 1, you've played a lot of Dragon Ball Xenoverse 2 because it's exactly the same thing. Or almost. Okay. I'm exaggerating for effect.
Sure.
Watch Dogs 2, I also played a little bit. I think, Daniel, you've played a little bit more. I'll say what I think of my very short experience with it, but maybe you can give us your impressions. You've played... I think you like the game, right?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite games this year, to be honest. And I think that comes down to the fact that I'm one of those guys that likes the Assassin's Creed type games. You know, the open world running around. And so this is effectively a modern version of it. And there's just a lot more, in my opinion, you know, freedom and tools to do what to do. So you've got stuff like a quadcopter and a rover on two wheels and stuff. And similar to, I think, how Far Cry was, where you could kind of, Far Cry 3, that is, and 4, where you could sort of approach your base and do whatever you want. It's similar in this sort of game where you can, you know, approach a base. You can go in the old traditional way, you know, Metal Gear Solid 5 stealth kind of way and take out people or whatever. Or you can hang back and use the environment by hacking it. And so there's like electricity poles you can blow up next to people, and that will take them out. And you can disable people's kind of cell phones and stuff, and you know, so they can stop calling reinforcements. And it's quite creative because you can basically do it any way you want. So, you know, for example, one mission, I was just in the car, and I sent in my rover to do the entire mission whilst I was about, you know, half mile down the road just relaxing. And then the next one, you know, I went in and did everything myself, so I was there. And it's quite good. It's very creative. The story, I think, is quite unique. I don't think it's for everyone, but it's, you know, it's quite modern. It's quite hip. It's quite just, it's quite, it's a bit of a parody. So it takes the piss out of everything. overall, I think it's actually really a really good fun game. So if you're into that sort of stuff, I mean, I'd recommend it.
You know, I think it's, there are many qualities. It's beautiful, really, really beautiful. The city is really, I mean, if you played Grand Theft Auto 5, you kind of know what to expect. It's a good version emulation of that. But what kind of took me a little bit out of it was, first, you know, in the first mission, which is gets you into the hacker spirit, you're like, you're going in, you're this rebel, you're the hacker, and all of a sudden 10 minutes in, you pull out your like cable with the billiard bowl and you strangle a poor security guard, and then you pull out your gun and you, if you choose to, you can shoot at people, and I'm like, who the hell is this hacker? Like, what is this? It yeah, really it's took a me bit, out of it. And
it's weird because in the game, they don't make any reference to the guns at all, other than you can make them and buy ammo and stuff and whatever. But the entire game is basically that there's no guns, but you have them and you can use them. And you can, you know, destroy everyone and kill everyone. And it does take you out of it, but I think once I got into it and once I started playing it without guns, I'll be honest, in the last kind of like 10 missions or whatever I did, I think I used a gun maybe once or twice.
Okay, so the,
you can't
the
actually
thing
play
is,
the game really stealthily.
It seems like they do mention like, oh, he has a gun permit. Is that going to be a problem? And then they don't mention it again. And there's this whole, you know, the hacker ethos is a little bit, I mean, it is very caricature heavy, but it felt like, you know, In Grand Theft Auto, it's satire and it's funny and very in this one it's more like, haha, look at those hipsters at Google, they're drinking coffee and they have beards, and it felt a little bit heavy-handed, and those the hackers, your friends, some of them are okay, but they're all like, I mean, it feels like, it doesn't feel like a satire, it feels like a caricature. And I mean, the game itself looks fun enough, but for me, it was kind of that aspect was a little bit of a disappointment. But it seems what you're saying is, if you focus on the mechanics, and you know, maybe the story is enjoyable as well, and if you're not too bothered by that that aspect of it, if you focus on the mechanics, that is a really enjoyable part of the game.
Yeah, the story can be fun at times, and yes, I'll agree with you. It doesn't make sense about the guns, and it's a bit weird overall, but the actual gameplay and mechanics itself, absolutely great. I love the freedom it has. You can do whatever you want.
Okay.
I got a question for you guys. In the original Watch Dogs, you could play, you could kind of do what you want, like you said, but there was no like detriments to you, like killing everyone as you came across. Is there anything like that in this game at all?
In what way do you mean?
Just like, are you punished for killing everyone in a mission, or is it just your choice?
No, there isn't really anything to that effect. You got police, obviously, like in the first game, and they'll come after you if they see you or someone calls them.
But
I mean, it's a bit stupid because, you know, a civilian next to you will start calling the police. You put out a gun and shoot them, and that's it. No one calls the police anymore. everyone's around you just watching you shoot the person. But because you killed that one person calling the police, no one else will call the police.
Yeah, I remember in the last game you could like run up and like knock someone down who was calling the police, and they'd be like, and then they get up and go like, "Oh, everything's great. Let's move on."
You know, it does feel like a game where it does feel a little bit like they included guns and that kind of gameplay because they couldn't not to. It would have been like too weird.
I think that's why they did it. And overall, yes, it might not work 100%. But really, when you get into the game, when you actually use the tools that you have and kind of go through the missions, it actually works fine.
Okay, well, maybe that's the way to approach it.
Guns, but,
Dishonored 2, I also played a little bit, but that time I'm going to turn to Ed, who played a little bit more, and I think he really enjoyed it.
Oh, this game is so good. So when Dishonored 1 came out, I looked at it, I was like, this is a completely new IP from Bethesda Studio, not Bethesda themselves.
Well, it's Arkane Studio. It's a French studio, so please say good things.
Yeah, no, but I absolutely adored the first one. I thought it was incredible. I like the mix of stealth, and I like the fact that you actually got punished for killing versus like knocking everyone out and going the slow route by like the increased chaos, and there was like things in the world that happened if you had increased chaos. Dishonored 2 is honestly just more of the same but better, you know.
More of the same but better. I think I like that description.
The fact that you can play as Emily is cool. She was the princess that was kidnapped in the last game. In this game, you could actually play as her. She has really cool abilities. The vision ability is exactly the same as the one was in the first game. You get the ability to shadow walk, so you can become a little shadow, and you have these creepy little tendril arms that move ahead of you as you walk. It's kind of neat. You're pretty much invisible unless you're like right next to an enemy. And you can knock people out like once, or as you upgrade it more than once before you're forced back out of that form. My absolute favorite ability is called Domino, and the way this works is you basically go up to an enemy and use the ability, and it basically links them. And then you go up to another person, use the ability, and links them too. And then you can knock out one, and it knocks out the other. Or you can kill one, and it kills the other. And so I use this all the time. If there's like a big group of enemies, I'll like domino three of them, and then I'll shoot them with a sleep dart, and they'll all fall asleep.
Oh, it seems like you're the most enthusiastic of anyone here has been since the beginning of the show. I think I'm going to have to make this the name of the episode. I used an illustration of this game for my French show. I think I'm going to have to do it for this one as well, because you're so you're so excited about it.
It's cool. It really is.
So let me ask you a question. I did love. I played a lot of the first one. I didn't finish it, but I really enjoyed the gameplay and the world, which is really a big part of the game. But I got frustrated after a while because it was a little bit too difficult for me. Because I think I don't have the patience or don't have the skill to. Do things in a stealthy enough way. Mm-hmm. And in this one, I started and I figured, I want to try this the proper way. So I started in normal, but I found that for me, because I'm not used to it, the range of the footsteps that enemies would hear was really large, and I felt I was hidden, and I wasn't. They would come find me, and they would kill me in a couple of lulls, and so that was a little bit frustrating. I did like two or three or four missions, so I'm wondering if I shouldn't just knock down the difficulty to easy and just go through the thing and enjoy the world and maybe a little bit of gameplay, and maybe potentially down the line getting it. Increasing the difficulty again, or do you think I'm really gonna miss out on the joy of the game and I should stick it out with the normal difficulty?
So when I'm playing through a mission, I pretty much walk through the entire thing crouched. And that way you dampen your footsteps a lot because you move a lot slower. And so that coupled with I also use dark vision like almost all the time, which is the ability where you can see through walls and see people. Mm-hmm. And you can also see not just people, but also their eye beams, like their vision, basically.
Okay, so you know when they're looking in your direction or not more easily.
Exactly. And I try very hard not to like go in guns blazing and stuff like that. So I actually can't really talk too much about the combat part of it because I actually played. I like to play this game completely ghosted. So if I get caught, I actually reload. And so that can be a little cheap way of playing the game, but I like. I just like playing stealth games that way.
So, but you know, for my specific issue of do you think I would miss out if I didn't do that?
If I went too easy. I think the highlight of the game is being able to like listen in on conversations and explore different areas and stuff like that. The stealth elements of the game, if you're given a little bit, if you turn it back to easy, I think you might miss out on kind of the fun of like maneuvering around the world and trying to find little hidden passageways in order to get around things. But if you play the game where if you get caught, you pretty much fight your way out, then maybe dropping it down to easy might be good for you.
Hmm. I wanna try it with.
That's me in every stealth game.
Yeah. Do you play stealth games in easy?
Me? Depends. I guess if I want to finish it quickly, I might. But I'm quite a big fan of stealth games, and so I will kind of try and play them properly. But I'll admit to it. Every time it goes wrong, I'll just pull out a gun or something. I mean, I try not to do it, but you know, it happens sometimes.
Okay, well, if anyone in the audience has, you know, some kind of advice for me, I would be curious to hear what you have to say. Should I just stick it out or should I just never mind and go too easy? I will see.
You definitely have to be patient with this game.
Right. That's how you... Maybe I should watch some videos on YouTube and just figure out how to actually play it. Like, if there are a couple of guards with, you know, their back turned, but you know they're going to see you if you go on the side, you have to wait forever until they move, or is that...
No, I use the far reach or blink ability to get around. Hmm. If you find that... Because it's not very obvious, but during far reach, you can't be seen.
Okay.
So are you playing as Emily or Corvo?
Emily.
Okay, yeah. So when you use far reach, it seems like you're being like dragged along or whatever, and that anyone would see you fly across the map or whatever, but really it's just a little animation. They don't see you at all when you use that.
All right. Well, I'll try. We'll see what happens. Maybe I'll try to stick it out for a little bit, but I don't know. The thing is, I really want to play the game. I really want to enjoy it, but it's... Well, anyway. All right. Let's move on to Final Fantasy XV, which just came out, but in France, it's been sent by Amazon for a few days before, and some stores were selling it before. Basically, everyone's been playing it since Saturday.
I noticed this as well. My entire Twitter feed, every time I go on there, someone is saying, just finished Final Fantasy XV. I'm like, what?
Just finished?
It's not even out. Yeah.
Holy cow.
I've got at least 10 people.
Don't you guys get the early releases? Is that uncommon?
I've never had it. I mean, maybe once.
I've never gotten it either.
Really? Everyone else gets it, just not me.
The only exception to that is Bethesda released actually on their Dishonored 2 a day early for physical, so people could like put it in the drive and activate it on Steam, right? Which meant that you couldn't play it till after midnight,
right?
And Overwatch did the same thing,
right?
So those are the only exceptions of something where it came out early, like before the original scheduled release date, and I've gotten it then.
Right. So, in France, it's quite common that people don't, or companies and stores don't respect the...
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And it was weird because I went to...
Gotta stick it to the man in some way, huh?
Exactly. but, you know, so I went to a store in Finland, and it was like the day before at 8 p.m., and I wanted to buy something, and they looked at me like I was from another planet. It was weird, and I was like, but the store is closing in an hour, and it's not like, you know, it's I know it's coming out tomorrow, but are you really gonna make me come back in like 12 hours to get it? And so anyway, it was, yes, they did, and they looked at me again like I was very strange. But yeah, so Final Fantasy 15 reviews are coming out. Some people love it. Some people hate it. I've played, again, a couple of hours of it because I wasn't home and I was super busy. I wanted to play more. It is definitely interesting. It's a departure from Final Fantasy, and in a way, from the traditional ones. I haven't played for a long time. You know, I haven't played 13 or 12 even. So for me, that jump is really significant to an action-based system. There is an option to make it a little bit more strategic, but the core of the games is fights, and it's pretty action-based. The combat system itself is pretty fun. The overall world is an open world in a way that feels... It's not bad, but it's kind of... You know, I'm being very harsh with Japanese companies because on one hand, I feel that there are sometimes too traditional and can't understand the things that the European or Western, American European companies do in gaming that advance the medium. And at the same time, when the Japanese companies do follow that example and take what works from those games, it feels to me like they're just copying what works in the West and they're not making it their own enough. Or, you know, I was hoping for something a little bit different. Again, this is really just the beginning, but the overall world and the quests and the points of interest are going to feel very familiar to anyone who has played an open world game before, or even an MMORPG. In many ways, it feels like a solo MMO. So it's not bad again. The gameplay system is okay. And I haven't played enough to judge the complexity of it, but it's enjoyable for the beginning already. The style is interesting. You know, I can't decide if I like it or if I think it's ridiculous. You have the Japanese aesthetic with the kids that look like they're from a boys band, or, you know, the protagonists that look like they're from a boys band, and with the ridiculous hair and the sulky attitude as Japanese characters often have. But at the same time, there's a kind of camaraderie that comes out of those four characters that are together. When, you know, there's one of them who takes pictures all the time. And I was looking at this thinking, this is just, what is he doing? It's ridiculous, you know? You're like setting up the camp and there's this guy taking pictures. But then on the first night, when you rest for the first time, it turns out that you can see all of the pictures that the guy has taken and, of course, save them to your PlayStation. So it really feels like you have this one character who's hanging out with you taking pictures, and you find some funny moments from your adventure you've been living and you capture them, and you know, the way you look at the pictures is kind of very similar to when you've been out with friends and, you know, you've taken a lot of pictures because we all do with our smartphones today, and then you look at them at the end of the day and it makes you smile. And that's the feeling I got from that silly dude with his pictures. So there are some interesting aspects to it. There are some silly aspects to it, and I'm going to have to play a lot more to decide what I think of the game. But I would say the high hopes I had haven't been crushed yet. So we'll see what happens. And finally...
Are there towns? Sorry. Are there towns where you can talk to people?
Yes, but there's basically one or two people you can talk to, and it's not very... That you know, it doesn't feel yet like a living, breathing world. It feels like a series of quest hubs at this point. Yeah, it's not like you're going to go and find out the worries of people, and then it's basically, oh, can you get this for me? And, oh, can you kill these monsters? So, yeah, it doesn't have that aspect to it. Inside, we're going to talk about Inside for a little bit. This is not a AAA game. It's a very indie title developed by Playdead, who did the game Limbo. I'm sure many of you remember. It was basically a kid in a very black and white environment. It was a platformer slash puzzler from left to right. The kid was moving from left to right and having to push things and climb on things and jump to things. And Inside is basically the same thing, except better realized. It feels like for Playdead, Limbo was the sketch and Inside is the actual painting. That's the way I look at it, and it's a pretty incredible painting. And Ed, I know you've played it as well.
Yeah.
What did you think of that game?
So I loved the original Limbo. I thought it was cool. It was kind of the introduction of this idea of we could have indie games as being a thing, because it kind of came out around the time when those were just starting to kick up. So I was really looking forward to Inside, and I think that it pretty much nailed everything that I wanted it to. The atmosphere is incredible. The puzzles are cool, a little simple, but I don't think that really pulls away from the experience at all. And the narrative that's there is interesting and weird and just kind of awesome, I think.
Yeah, it manages to convey emotions and impressions about the world without a single word being uttered in the entire game. And when I think about it, I played through it. It's not very long. It's maybe 5 or 6 hours. And the puzzles are simple enough that you're not going to be banging your head against the wall. So
exactly.
I think that's a plus, actually, for me. It is. But when I think about it, I actually get emotional still now. And that is very rare, especially for a game like this.
You have an eerie feeling while you're playing it the entire time. Like even even after you kind of figure out a little bit of what's going on or whatever, you still kind of feel a little weird.
Yeah.
And every time I think back in the game, I still feel that little weirdness creeping back in, you know?
And it gets, you know, it's not that it gets weirder over the course of the game. It's, well, maybe you could say it does, but it's just that it finds new ways of showing you how weird this thing is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would definitely recommend it. A demo is available. It just came out a few days ago. And no matter how long the demo is, I'm sure it will convey the most important parts of the game. And it pains me to say this, but I'm not sure you need to pay for the game to get what is good about it. The demo is probably going to be enough. So you should absolutely go out and do it. I'm not sorry I bought it, for sure. But it is an achievement.
What part of the demo is the game? Like where it's...
I'm not sure. I would guess it's the beginning, but I have no idea. Okay. I think the beginning would be the best, but go try it out. The reason I even bought the game was because it was part of the Game of the Year nominees for the Game Awards, which are happening in just a couple of days now. There are many, many, many categories for the Game of the Year. For the Game Awards. Basically, it felt like Jeff Keighley, who's putting this thing together, really wanted everyone to get a gold star. That's the feeling I get. But the Game of the Year nominees are basically Doom, Overwatch, Titanfall 2, Uncharted 4, and Inside, which, you know, sticks out like a sore thumb between all of these AAA titles. And I'm really happy it's included. Yeah. Daniel, what do you think? Which one would you choose for your Game of the Year if you had to choose between those four? Maybe you have another one. It's basically all FPSs or close enough, except for Inside. But I don't know. Do you have a favorite in that list?
I mean, they're all good, to be honest. The only ones that I would say, in my personal opinion, were the best for me were Overwatch and Uncharted. Yeah. I haven't played Titanfall, so I don't really... I've heard good things, but I haven't played it, so I don't know how, you know, it would stack up once I do play it. But those two are certainly the best. Overwatch for me was certainly a huge surprise. I didn't really know about it until early in the year, and when it did come out and I played it, I was, you know, really kind of taken with that game. Uncharted 4, I guess, for obvious reasons, you know, it's part of a long-running series, and they really did well in innovating on that and also closing the series itself.
Mm. Yeah.
I played all but Titanfall. And I think it's really hard for me, but Overwatch and Uncharted are probably up there. Doom was good, but it wasn't like, didn't like blow my mind. Like, I feel like Uncharted's narrative, I think, was really strong, and the visuals were obviously very strong. The ending I thought was great and heartwarming. But Overwatch is just, it's awesome. It's incredible.
You know, I was joking about this on Twitter a few days ago. I've been in love with Overwatch for many, you know, it's what's been, what, a year, maybe more, since I played it at the first BlizzCon when it was introduced 2 years ago. And it was, it's been very strange for me to see that game sort of turn into the success it's been. It's kind of like the bird is out of the nest now and it's flying on its own. I feel some kind of, obviously my relationship with Blizzard is very strong. So, the success of Overwatch is really something to behold. Yeah, Daniel?
Yeah, Patrick, I remember we talked about this the last time I was on.
It was when the
beta came out, right?
Yeah, I was talking about Overwatch all the time. It was, you know, for when the beta came out, it's all I could talk about, all I could play.
And back then, I hadn't played it, I hadn't looked at it properly. I mean, I knew of it, and, you know, I was like, oh, wow, it's suddenly getting some steam. But I hadn't really played it, so once I did after that, you were right about everything you said.
You know, that is also, I think, a common reaction from a lot of people, because when you look at it from afar, you're like, oh, okay, it's a competitive FPS. That's really not my thing. So have fun. And it was my reaction as well. But a lot of people who have, you know, tried it for one reason or another have found out that it can be your thing. And that's what I had been saying for many other people, obviously, for months. So it's really a weird feeling to have this, be confirmed and everyone being on the bandwagon now. It's kind of like I knew the band when they were small, and obviously for Blizzard, small is kind of a, you know, not very accurate description, but I knew the band when they were small and now everyone likes them. So I'm proud of the thing, but it's a little bit, it's not my thing anymore, kind of. It felt like it was my thing that I was defending, and that was trying to sell to a lot of people who were a little bit like, they were doubters. They're like, yeah, I don't know. And so, it feels, it's nice. I feel some kind of pride in this thing. But obviously, this is a very silly feeling to have, but, all this to say, obviously, it's going to be my game of the year. Personally, I think there is no way around it. All of them were great. Doom, obviously. Titanfall 2, I think, was solid. Uncharted 4, I loved, but especially for the ending, which completely brought it over the top for me. Until then, it was okay, but the ending was like, ah. So we'll see. And again, I'm very happy Inside is in that list. So the Game Awards happening December 1st, and that's in 2 days, just 2 days, and so we'll know. And Kojima is going to be there, finally getting his award from last year when Konami prevented him from going there. And again, that's Jeff Keighley being buddies with Kojima. I think there was very little doubt. They will be showing some Breath of the Wild. Again, Keighley being cozy with some of the developers and publishers. So he's good friends with the people at Nintendo, apparently. And they will be focusing on showing trailers based out of gameplay instead of CGI or pre-render stuff like they did with No Man's Sky, which led to the issues we've heard about. So that's probably a good thing. And talking about No Man's Sky, it's got a huge update called the Foundation Update, which is the basis for many more changes coming that expand the game. There's base building now. There's a ton of things. So if you were disappointed in No Man's Sky, well, I think if you were disappointed, this is not necessarily going to be to make it better for you. But if you thought it was cool but didn't have enough stuff, maybe you want to go back to it and try it again. And then Valve is doing the Steam Awards, which are entirely chosen and voted on by the community. That's an interesting one as well. I'll be very curious to see what comes out of it and which games are going to get the awards there. Talking about right after the Game Awards, just a couple of days after, we have the now traditional PlayStation Experience, and there might be an announcement for more Marvel versus Capcom 4 at the Capcom what is it called, the Pro Cup, the World Cup, their esports tournament they have there, which is happening I think the day after the keynote ceremony, and maybe Ace Combat 7, which is a PSVR title, supposedly entirely PSVR, so we'll see that. I'm running through the news, please stop me if you have anything to add about these items. Persona 5 has been delayed to April. Oh no, right? Well, no, because it will include the Japanese VO. Yay! Because that was
a given. I still remember the 2013 announcements. That was fun.
You what, sorry?
The 2013 announcements, when they were supposed to come out then.
Right. Well, you know what? All good things come. But, you know, I'm absolutely happy to wait a couple extra months.
Sure, sure.
If it means we get the Japanese voiceover. Because playing that game, which is so Japanese, without, you know, in English, I know some people do that, but it's something I just don't understand. You lose, a huge part of the attraction you get for these games is the immersion in the foreign culture, and you lose half of it with if you play with the Japanese dubbing, even if with the English dubbing, I'm sorry, even if it's good, it's so not the same. I don't know, am I crazy for thinking this, or do you guys play?
I say the same thing all the time. I'd much rather have, no matter what it is, if it's, you know, French or Chinese or Japanese, whatever, you know, I'd rather have the original language or dub or whatever it is. Yeah, it's cool if it's going to be in an English one as well. And if that's the only option on listening to that, no problem. But I'd much rather have the original.
Yeah. So good things for Persona 5. We'll have to wait a little bit longer. But, you know, anyway, I'm going to have such a backlog of games to complete after the holiday season. it's probably not such a bad thing to have a little bit more time before it starts again. Especially since we're going to have Mass Effect Andromeda coming out at some point in early 2017.
Sure. It's going to. Have you guys looked at the beginning of next year as far as like what the releases are?
No, I haven't in a while.
It's busy.
I mean, off the top of my head, I'm thinking of Mass Effect, Tekken 7, which I'm going to have to play a lot of, and Persona 5. Is there anything else also of note?
There's loads, man.
Neo, For Honor, Horizon Zero Dawn, Halo Wars 2. That's all in February.
Jeez.
January has Gravity Rush 2, which I'm interested in. And not a lot as far as like big releases in January.
It's freaking January. How can
you? Resident Evil 7.
February looks tight, packed in. There's no way that I'm going to be able to finish all those games before the end of the month at all. Yeah. Like, it's not even going to be close.
Yeah. So we'll
Horizon
see.
Horizon doesn't count though, because it comes on the last day of the month.
Well, yeah, still.
Guys, Resident Evil 7 in January?
Oh, yeah, Resident Evil 7. Yeah. Exactly. Yep.
Wow. Okay.
The new Valkyria game comes out on the 19th as well.
Basically,
if you go to
yeah, Daniel, if you go to what?
No, if you go to any gaming website, you just look at the list of releases.
Right. Right.
Yes, we've mentioned some of them now, but there are loads, man. There's just everything. Everything is coming out in February and January and March.
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty. Maybe that's why EA thought we're not going to wait for Titanfall, because if we do, we're going to have to wait until like June.
I don't know. There weren't these announcements, and they all came like over the last. Like, everyone knows it's packed, and then another company will go, "Oh yeah, we're releasing our game in February."
I think if they drop Titanfall 2 at like the the last week of January or something like that, it would have done way better. I mean, if you look at Dying Light as an example of something that, like, it's not the greatest game in the world, but the fact that it came out in January made it, like, sell gangbusters in comparison.
Yeah, you're right, you're right, you're probably right. All right, a few other bits of news. There might be a return of the ability, of the rumored ability, to change your PSN account name. Possibly there's a hint of that in the latest PS4 SDK. So that would be nice. It's been a long time and it's been promised a few times. I don't know why. It's one of my pet peeves. It really annoys me that you can't.
It'll be good for me because I'll finally be able to give out my PSN name to people.
Do you have a horribly impossible?
It's the worst. It's the worst name ever. And I don't. Yes, I'll give it out, but I don't want to. It's like when you're like 12 when you create one of those like really random.
Shadow Killer 74 or something like that, right?
I mean, it's not worse. But you know, obviously for me, and now when I'm a bit older, I'll kind of look back and go, what was I thinking? Why did I do that?
And they can't not do it, right? Because there are lots of people who are in that case. And the alternative is that you're stuck with your PSN name forever. And that can't be their plan. They have to allow people to change it at some point somehow.
So. Yeah, I honestly think it was just a huge technical limitation that they had to work really hard to get by. If I was doing it, it would be like, oh, there's only one place that you'd have to change, but
yeah, of course they have. Yeah, usually what happens
I have a feeling it's way, way, way more complicated than that.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's probably some kind of database issue where the thing is associated with everything else, and you can change it without having a cascading effect on everything else that you have to. So they probably have to create an entirely new database with one ID that is going to encompass everything else, but exactly. That one is going to be probably so. Hopefully it will come soon, and it's going to cost you a pretty penny to change your name, I'm sure. Mortal Kombat. Who doesn't love the original Mortal Kombat movie, right? You remember that amazing, the amazing song, like Mortal Kombat, right? Right?
Yeah,
no? Indeed. Okay, not a lot of enthusiasm on the part of my co-hosts. I'll shut up now. But it was cool. It was cool, and apparently, it was cool at the time. It's actually horrible. I watched it again a year ago. It is so bad.
But I've heard about it, and it looks bad.
Yeah, I mean, I remembered kind of the Street Fighter movie as the bad one, the really bad one, and this one as the good one. Actually, the Street Fighter movie is the really, really bad one, and this one is the really bad one. So there you go. But we're going to have a reboot, and I think that could be interesting. It could be fun. And talking about movie adaptations, Monster Hunter is apparently the next franchise from Capcom that's going to be adapted into a movie universe. And it's the team, the company behind, or at least some of the people behind the Resident Evil series, which are going to be in charge of this, which I think makes sense because Resident Evil, for as cheesy as it is, it was always fun movies, and I think it could be interesting to see that Monster Hunter universe, which is very hard to get into. Every time, again, it's kind of like Pokemon. Every time there's a new Monster Hunter, I try the demo really hard, wanting to like it. I don't get it. I get rushed by the mobs. I don't get into it, but I want to, find out more about that universe and that series, which is so popular. Maybe the movies would be a good way of doing that. So we'll hopefully have a chance to do that in the next few years. And there are a few other things. I think we're going to close the show here, though. We've already been going on for an hour and a half. That should be enough. Before we close it off, I, of course, as always, want to give my co-hosts an opportunity to tell us where we can find them, starting with Mr. Mitchell. Where are you on the internet?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/Adesis. I stream live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern and play all sorts of things. I'm trying to like lean more towards indie a little bit lately. But yeah, you can follow the schedule over at 4playernetwork.com/calendar and watch us live at 4pp.tv.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Daniel, what about you?
Sure. So people can find me at my Twitter handle as well, which is twitter.com/ JugaEX. You can put the spelling, I think, can't you, Patrick, in the description or whatever.
Right? Yeah, yeah. I'll include the. Awesome. I usually include the Twitter handles in the show notes.
And so that's basically. I mean, if people are listening, if they're interested in sort of the video games industry and perhaps more kind of the sales and trends and that sort of side, that's usually what I'm covering and posting about. So there's always some sort of interesting news I post every day. It's quite good to discuss it and go through that.
Yeah, basically, you know, for this show, we tried to make a show that will help people know and understand the gaming industry. And certainly Daniel's Twitter account helps a lot for that. If not, you know, it's basically one of the main resources. If you need to get an understanding of the numbers, that's the place you want to go. So thanks a lot for being with us today, Daniel. And for me, I am Not Patrick on Twitter and on Facebook, and you can find the show at frenchspin.fr. And if you enjoy other types of discussions of a political nature, but not, you know, the kind of political discussion that supposedly doesn't happen, meaning it's reasonable and friendly, then you can go listen to the Phileas Club on the same site at frenchspin.com. And I've been getting many, many positive reviews about the last couple of episodes. People seem to really like it, especially in a climate where sanity seems to be lacking and people just enjoy yelling at one another. I think that show is an important one to show that it is possible to have an actual discussion. So go check that out as well. But that's going to be it for us. Again, thank you immensely to Ed and to Daniel for being on the show and helping me navigate the news for this episode. And we will be back in a couple of weeks as usual, and we'll have had the Game Awards. We'll know what is the best game of the world of the year. That is exciting. Talk to you then.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.